Since 1992, the Department of Education has been teaching Manx to the island's children. For just over a third of a century now, most children have been learning a bit of Manx at primary school, and some have been learning a lot more at secondary school. As part of Bliain na Gaeilge, Year of the Manx Language, Perspective continues its series of talks with the movers and shakers of the Manx language, with head of the Department of Education's Manx Language Service, Cathy Clucas. Cathy joins me now in the studio.
Currently, I'm not for very long. I've started recently as the lead for the Nskimmi Gaeilgeach, which is the Manx Language Service.
Well, if we start off with the Nskimmi Gaeilgeach, then what exactly is it that team does?
What don't they do? I'll start for. I think not everyone understands how much we do. Basically, we teach in Manx in all the schools on the island, except for the Bun School Gaeilgeach, and we don't deliver a service at King William's College either. So they're the only places we don't teach. Other than that, we teach from year four through to A level. And we have a diverse range of learners. We have some that have come from the Bun School Gaeilgeach that have learnt through immersion. So they have a few lessons delivered at the QE2 through Manx. But we also have lessons to teach sort of children that haven't gone through the Bun School Gaeilgeach, so they can further their knowledge of Manx from what they've, the base, a little bit they've learnt in primary school through to secondary school, so they can take a GCSE equivalent or an A-level equivalent. They can go that far if they wish to.
And of course, this is the longest running part of all the various Manx language services that we have now. Effectively, it was set up, I think it was in 1992. It predates the Bun School Gaeilgeach by 8 years and Mun Gé Vaeilge by 4 or 5 years too. So it's a really important service.
Yeah, it's all part of the process of how things have changed. I believe there was a question added. Was it the 1990? I can't remember which census it was.
Yeah,
there was a question.
It was a Gallup survey.
It a Gallup survey? Yeah. I'm trying to remember what it was. That asked the residents of the island at the time, if there was Manx offered in schools, would you have your children learn Manx? And the overwhelming majority of people said yes. So obviously there were other things that were happening too, but from that, there was a Manx language officer appointed. That was Dr. Brian Stowell. He was the first one. And, you know, they could only offer so much to begin with, but it was the start of it, you know. It's incredible what's done, you know.
it was a really important decade, yeah. The 1990s, because, of course, you were one of the leaders, certainly, of the development of Mun Gé Vaeilge, which then went on to do all the lobbying to get the Bun School established. When you were starting off back then, what did you expect was going to happen from all this?
Don't know. I'll do a bit of name dropping. I was talking to Miles Walker recently. Actually, it was at the Mun Gé Vaeilge Art exhibition at the Éireann Arts Centre. And he said, would you have imagined what's happening now 30 years ago? I said, not really. And then I said, but I wonder what will happen in the next 30 years. So, you know, you have to keep thinking what could be the next things that could happen in the future.
Yes, yeah. And that's really important, isn't it? That we don't just sit back and assume that these things are all going to continue to happen and expand. People need to do a little bit of lobbying and a bit of work to make it all happen, don't they?
Yeah, I mean it's lots of little bits of it's every. There's so many people you couldn't name everyone that's, and so many people they're behind the scenes doing things as well, you know, so many unknown heroes. And also there were lots of people before that the Manx Language Service was started that did things as well. I mean, I was recently talking to somebody saying there was Beal Irish, which Peggy Carswell was running, and Brenda Brideson. I remember Kate Pitts being there. And I don't know when they started, but I do remember going there with my eldest son, and that was at the Lock Promenade Church. Mm. So that was, you know, there was all these other things that were, had been happening, and I think there were isolated cases of some Manx being taught in some of the schools, like depending on the teachers were teaching, you know, depending on the teachers' interests. Some of them were teaching songs in Manx. There were some, like Colin Jerry, I know, did an awful lot to help children in the Peel, cloth workers. They did a lot of Manx there. So, and I think Leslie Quilliam would be another one. Mm. So there was teachers and people that had interest. It's all sort of contributing to moving forward where Manx is a bit more mainstream again.
And I suppose if you go back, in the 70s, because there was a... there was Mac Vannon was a big thing then. It really started to get electoral popularity. There was quite a bit of uncertainty or nervousness amongst the Manx population about the changes that were happening. And in the 70s, a lot of schools, a lot of school teachers, Manx school teachers particularly, were really keen to teach Manx. I mean, I remember I was taught Manx at Arbury Primary School when I was there for 2 or 3 years, anyway, maybe 3 or 4 years. It was happening, but it's like the, I suppose the history of Manx education really during the 20th century was you had phases, patches of Manx here, there, and in a few places. But in the 90s, when that after Brian Stoll was appointed, that was when things really started to take off, and it was formally part of the education system then.
Yeah, I mean, there's pathways, there's different learning pathways now, but there's still more that needs to be done. And an obvious gap is Key Stage 1 and foundation in schools. There's not much, so that would be great to have things going on there. I won't get political. I'll avoid talking about that. But obviously it's a difficult to make everything stretch, isn't it, and everything.
Yeah.
But also, like in the 1970s, there was rapid change happening. And I think now we're in another period where there's a lot of different rapid change happening. And I think you could apply it to anything, really. I think everyone gets a bit nervous or a bit anxious when there's any type of rapid change happening, no matter what it is. So I think there is an element of that happening again on the island. I think it's very important that whatever those changes are, that the culture and the language is part of it, and it's for everyone.
And of course, one of the things that's changing quite rapidly, it's probably changed the whole way in which society works, is social media and the internet. You know, when we started back in the 90s, these things were very much in their infancy. Even computers were only just starting to become a regular feature in people's homes. And now it's everywhere in terms of most people's lives. And in a way, that's a good thing for Manx, because one of the drawbacks we had was we didn't have enough people to warrant the production of books and film and resources. But electronic or social media, email, the like, means that you can produce resources for one or two people if you've got the time to do it. And it's not cost prohibitive. So actually social media and the internet are a real positive for Manx, aren't they?
Yeah, technology. Well, it's very important that we stay right at the cutting edge of technology, including AI and everything that goes with that, because that's what the future is for our young people. And so they need to be well equipped to use it. And why shouldn't Manx and our culture be part of that as well?
Yes, and you mentioned earlier that what doesn't the Skimmy Gilgak do? And one of the things that they're really good at, of course, is resource production, which has really taken off. And you you're good at sharing that sort of stuff on social media.
Yeah, we'd love to do more. We're trying to do, you know, it's getting enough hours in the day to be able to do so much that we can do. We're very lucky. We've got some amazingly talented staff on our team that can do all sorts of amazing things with tech, which really helps as well. But yes, we'd like to produce more that could be shared. So our plan is to eventually get more onto our website so that anyone can access that, and that could be used by anyone if they need to, you know. So that's a place that we're not really delivering to, and it's an area where there's, for any children, young people that are homeschooled, so, you know, you'd hope there's access there for them as well, so it's inclusive as much as we can be.
And it is a Department of Education service, the Manx Peripatetic team, the Skimmy Gaeilge.
Yeah.
And I mean the scale of what you do, effectively, you're trying to teach from year four through to A level. Mm-hmm. I mean, for those like me who don't really understand what year four means, what sort of age group are we talking about?
The 7-8 year olds. Right. So it's key stage two, the start of key stage two, and then we go into year five, which is the sort of 9-10, and then year six, which is sort of 10-11. Some of them aren't quite 11, and then they're into high school.
Yeah. And you do this with a relatively small team.
Yeah. We don't all work full time. So as an equivalent, there's only 6 full time members, but we've got 9, but some only work part time. Mm-hmm. So we do a lot.
Yes, and I imagine just writing the timetable out and working out who's going to be where and when and for how long, that in itself must be quite a challenge.
It is. Well, Paul Rogers, when he worked on the team, he used to do that, and he said, oh, I love a challenge, and I quite like the challenge as well. So it's fitting it all in. We've got, basically, the way we have to do it is the high schools come first, because that's all part of a bigger timetable, and we have to fit in with them, and then we fit in primaries as much as, and accommodate them so it works for them as much as possible. So yeah, it's quite a big, good challenge, satisfying challenge when it works. Yeah. So you get it to work.
and in terms of the high schools, because I know there have been times where some high schools haven't been so keen to support. Is it in all the high schools now?
Yes. We're in all the high schools, and you know, it they've got their own demands on what they have to have happen to them as well. So it's tricky, because there's so much going on in schools, and there's so many different demands, things that have to be fitted in. But in high schools with timetabled lessons, we do try and offer enrichment as well. But that's down to the individual staff members if they want to offer that.
And what does enrichment mean?
Well, like having a club. Mm. For one of the clubs in the past, they produced a video which went for the Film G, yeah. Which was the ALBA, which was a film, again, a Scottish Gaelic Film Award. And, you know, they put in an entry for that, and they did really, really well. And also one of our staff has put films in for that as well. I'm going on a tangent now. We produce some which are on our website, which are Shell and Ellen, which are films in Manx which you can add subtitles to, about like, for instance, one was about making bread, so it was from growing the bread right through to it being made by Noah Bakehouse, you know, and then all the whole process. So they're on our website. So they were entered as well. But coming back to enrichment, so it's maybe they made a magazine, produced that as well, making games, you know, sometimes just playing games, socialising. I've done with some of the older ones that I've, is like reading things, you know, read. It's like we read... what did we read? We read that, I can't remember what it's called now. It was like a graphic novel, reading reading bits of it.
Right.
And then talking about what was in the text and then saying, well, maybe suggesting maybe they could produce their own or make, you know, that sort of thing. Or just playing games, you know, it's quite good fun as well. It, you know, you go with what, it doesn't have to be anything too formal, but that's, that's the type of thing you don't, or you do, we do play games in our lessons, but we don't always get time to do other things that we'd like to do. So it's quite nice.
And of course, games like Scrabble are really good games if you're trying to build your knowledge of a language, but you do have to have a specialised set of Scrabble letters, don't you?
Yes, I don't play Scrabble. That's one I've avoided. I've made crosswords and word searches and things like that, but they're that's technology again. Mm. You know, you can do things like that. It's a lot easier than it used to be.
In terms then of the numbers in this of children that you actually teach, roughly how many would you say you've got?
Well, it varies from term to term, depending on what school years was. But overall, roughly about 1,700, 1,800 thereabouts.
And effectively, that's 1,700 people who wouldn't normally have known anything about the Manx language, or would have had probably very little exposure. Some schools, to be fair, some of the teachers do teach bits of Manx as part of normal sort of school, but on the whole, your service is the one place that people get.
We're a regular. We regularly are in the schools, and also we support them in other ways too. You know, in the past, I've been asked to help. There was Foxdale School. They want to do a Melia as part of the Harvest Festival. So I was taught them some rhymes about that and how to do the dance a little bit. You know, there were some of them that could do it, so because I wasn't there all the time, obviously. So just to get the basic principles of how to say, you know, tuon, 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 all this sort of thing for the dance. And they did, and then he did a little presentation, and some of it was in Manx as an assembly where parents came, and then they had a harvest sale afterwards. So there's lots of examples. You know, we get asked to support children for the Manx Folk Awards. We listen to the men for the Guild, for the Manx classes in the Guild as well. So, yeah, we do that as well if we get asked to. And I think schools do what they can. Some schools have lots of signage and posters and this sort of thing. You know, it varies, you know. And sometimes it comes down to the interest of some of the teachers in the school, or it's something that the school has added to the part of their vision, so they're trying to incorporate more in. There is a new thing that's originally it was called, I don't know everything about it because that's other people know more because they're promoting it, is the Manx Campus. And it was called that to start off with, now it's called Ginsat Gilg. And they've got a few pilot schools, and I think they've given them posters and signage and other things so they can get like an award.
Yeah,
for how committed they are, you know, and little things they can move into the school.
All about embedding Manx effectively into a school, so that the school, uses Manx to a far greater extent in the day-to-day operation of the school.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I know some teachers do it anyway. They like do the register, you know, Muramai, you know, and they just say the name. Everyday thing. Fastamai, little things like that that you can incorporate into the everyday running of the school. And some do maybe do a bit more. You know, they might say Jintamai, well done. Or they might have some, you know, depending on how committed people are, some have stamps and, you know, stickers and quite easy to get. And back down to technology again, it's like amazing. And, you know, you can do all these things quite easily and they're not too much extra hassle to do, you know, but they all help.
And it's probably the wrong time of the year for you to be answering this question, but if a parent was pondering whether they should ask for their child, because of course this is an optional thing, isn't it, in most schools, or is it?
Well, it's actually in the primaries, it's the vast majority of schools, everyone does it.
Right, okay.
But yeah, there's not many that can't, and that might be down to, you know, other reasons. So it's so in some of the schools that's quite big, because some years have three classes in one year. So, you know, we have to negotiate
or have around, yeah.
two people to go or have longer sessions to fit so everyone gets some Manx. And that varies with different schools. So some schools have half an hour a week, and they do two terms. Some schools, what works for them is they do 1 year, does a whole term and they get an hour. Rather than doing two-year groups. And then you get some that do a half term for an hour and then another year does it. So it just depends on the school. You have to sort of negotiate with the school what works the best, what we can do and what works for them.
Yeah.
So, but the vast majority now are actually, everyone does it.
And what do you think the children get out of this?
Well, what do they get out of it? Well, we try and make our lessons as fun as possible. So, and also it's very good if it's to show that languages are important. So we've got so many children that don't just speak one language. They can speak two languages already. And then they add another one and that's fine. It's not a problem. But it's also shown that you value all cultures, all languages are all valued. So it's great. So you get, some children, I remember this little boy, hadn't been living on the island very long. And it came up that we're explaining there's two types of you in Manx. There's like ooh and shoo. And his face lit up and he was so delighted. He says, that's the same in my language. And he was really, really happy about that, you know. And he's going, it's exactly the same. I was going, yes. And then another incident where it's a little boy from Bulgaria. He was born here, but his parents are Bulgarian, but he knows a bit of Bulgarian. And the word sniakta is actually almost the same as the Bulgarian for snow, which is sniakt. And we're going, wow, that's amazing, isn't it? And things like that. So there's like a joy, fun, and also build their confidence. And also, hopefully, they see things like around when they're, you know, moving around the island, like the places, they know the name of some of the places, what they mean. Like Dulish, pretty well everyone knows what Dulish is now, you know. Which is great.
Yeah.
So it's quite common. So I think they get a lot, you know, feeling a sense of place and connection. I think it's important that everyone that lives on the island, especially all the children, you know, some people are going to make their lives here, but not everyone does. Some people move on to other places. But whilst they're here and whilst they're growing up here, it's given them a sense of belonging and a sense of place. And, you know, and hopefully they've got good associations with that, and you know what the Isle of Man is a good place, you know, and you'd hope they have that memory and things they can say in Manx about the island, you know, or even if it's a little bit, it's still something.
And these sorts of things are important, aren't they? Because I certainly remember when I was primary school was great because we had Manx lessons and the headmaster was really keen on Manx history and geography and all the rest of it. Manx dancing at the Le Colum Celyr, all these sorts of things. But when I went to secondary school, there was absolutely nothing about the Isle of Man. You learned about the history of every part of the world apart from the Isle of Man. You learned about the geography of every part of the world apart from the Isle of Man. It was quite a strange experience, really. And it is quite important that children who are educated in the Isle of Man know a little bit about the place, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. I remember where we went to Castlerush, and I think I remember in history we did a teeny amount on Vikings, but not really very much. That was about it, really. And I remember being aged about 15, and there was these books lying around the house, and I eventually got round to reading them. They were those. There is the school book version of A.W. Moore's History of the Isle of Man. Remember the yellow and the red? I think the yellow and red.
Is it a fellow called Young?
There was a Viking on the front, you know. And I remember sitting and reading these and being absolutely amazed. Had no idea of all the history that was on the island. And actually, I was a bit miffed, actually, to be honest,
yeah,
about it, because why aren't we learning any of this in school?
Because it's fascinating, the early, well, all the history of the Isle of Man, really. There's so much that's happened here. I was asked recently to give a talk about the Manx language, and I got into what language would have been spoken before the Vikings got here, or the Scandinavians, as we should probably better call them. And of course, we've got little glimpses of evidence. There's significant evidence that we were part of a Welsh kingdom, and maybe several Welsh kingdoms, and possibly Manannan Mac Lir, because he exists in both Welsh and Gaelic tradition. He could have been one of those early Q Celts, that's the Gaelic speaking Celts, that had sort of moved away from the P Celts, which is the old Welsh speakers, and maybe Manannan Mac Lir was kind of a bilingual Welsh Manx Gaelic or Irish old Irish speaker, and it's fascinating, I think, and knowing about all these links to our Celtic neighbours. I think it's quite fun.
It's really interesting because when you get into the legends surrounding the whole British Isles, really, a lot of them are very similar, and there's similar characters, and there's some very old stories. And then, like in Ireland, you have the Book of Invasions, and there's all talking about different peoples coming in and this sort of thing. Some of them, migration memories, they're very ancient, and they've like been rehashed and put different. Maybe it's the similar where, history is a bit determined by who writes it.
Yeah,
and who's paying the money and all, it's all a bit of PR propaganda. And I'm not sure, sometimes, like with legends and myths, and there might be a little bit of that going on, where who gets remembered and who doesn't, and this sort of thing, because there's a little bit of imbalance about it all in some ways, because there's an awful lot about... I'm going on another tangent here, a warning.
We love tangents on this programme.
There's a lot about Manannan, but, like, what about the female side of it? It's all a bit, so there must have been, just out of logic, there must have been both sides. But it seems to be more Manannan dominated, so I'm always curious about that.
And yet Manannan's wife features quite prominently in the story of Cú Chulainn and the great cattle raid, the Cooley cattle raid, which I really, at some stage, I want to read in Irish. I've read it several times in English, but again, that's fascinating, because many of the or some at least of the characters that are described in this ancient Irish text, which talks about history probably from around 500, maybe 400 AD, they refer to the likes of Manannan Mac Lir. They go to be educated in a place that could well have been, if you based on the the limited evidence that's in this the text, could well have been the Isle of Man. What was the Isle of Man like then? And of course, this is why learning Manx is quite fun, because you start to get your eyes open to all these interesting connections.
It's also all the similarities, in Scottish and Irish history and language, and also in Wales and Brittany and Cornwall, and even further afield, like if you look at some of the, they're prehistoric sites and things like that, that there's a lot of similar patterns on the rocks and this pre-stories, very ancient and like in Galifia, they've got same stuff. It's happening there, and it's really, I don't know what it all means.
No,
but it's really interesting.
Well, it is,
and
it's great. You can kind of speculate about these sorts of things too, can't you? As to what was going on, because of course, one of the great sites in the Isle of Man, possibly underrated, is the Mule Circle, which is described by archaeologists as similar to many stone circles that were happening around 3,000, I think it's 3,500 BC, but with its own quite novel characteristics, which were innovative and different. Mm. And, you know, what was going on? You know, first of all, how did all these communities from the very far-flung parts of the British Isles communicate with each other? How did they know to make their stone circles and ancient memorial sites similar? How did they know about that? And why did our one end up with significant innovations? And what we do know is that they knew a lot about geometry and they knew a lot about astronomy. It's fascinating, really.
Yeah, well, internet, of course. Mm. No, it is. It's very interesting. And the further you go into Europe, there's other similarities too, yeah. Mm. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of one. And then when you get into origins of language, that Manx has got links to further back Indo-European languages and connected to Sanskrit as well, you know, which is in northern India. It's quite, you know, there's a lot of words that are very similar in lots of different languages, not like, I think it's proto-Celt, I think. Mm. I'm not a linguist. I don't know all the technical words, so I'll just say that now. But yeah, it is very interesting.
And then, I mean, we've sort of we got sidetracked. You did warn the listener that we were going to get sidetracked. But in terms then of when children get to secondary school, what's the value? Because sadly, these sorts of things are quite important. You know, if someone is considering their education, they need to have consider very carefully if they're going to do things like Manx, because there's a general perception, I think, for most people that maybe there's little real value in Manx other than that kind of personal, warm, fuzzy feeling about identity and things. Mm-hmm. But in terms of actually making a living, it's maybe not so important. But I don't know, how would you respond to that?
Well, any learning is... Any type of learning has got transferable skills for employment and for life and for other things. So the Manx language also offers those. We have a lot of transferable skills that you can use, apply, like problem solving, which is a good one, a bit of resilience. Learning about culture is good. So if you learn about your own culture or the culture where you live, then you have a better awareness of other cultures and other languages. And just generally, as a human citizen off the world, you know, as being a better citizen as well, you know, having a better awareness. So there's those sort of basic things. But, I mean, we use technology. Also, it is a good thing to do in that. I've heard from a few people, remarking that when you go into university and you're applying, sometimes that's the thing that can make a difference, the fact that you've done something slightly different. That you know Manx can just make you stand out that little bit from the crowd. So I have heard of people that have said they're pretty sure they got their place in a certain university because they knew Manx. Mm. You
know. And that kind of differentiator is quite important in a world where everyone has the ability now. I mean, we live in a far more open society where most people have opportunity, certainly in the Isle of Man, you know, you can be exceptionally well qualified to go to whichever university, but as a result of that, universities are having to look for quirky differences to be able to distinguish between applications.
Yeah. But there's lots of different learning pathways, and it doesn't necessarily mean everyone will go to university, because you know, people who have got apprenticeships, then their knowledge is equivalent to a PhD, you know, in what they know. So it's not all academic, but it's also I mean, if we're imagining the island in the future and how the government has signed up to the charter, part of that, there will be more employability. There'll be opportunities for employment if they go through the full to the part three of the charter, won't they?
And so, that of course, just for the listener, the European Charter on Regional and Minority Languages, which isn't an EU thing, it's a European Council thing, which is separate. So anyone who's a bit anxious about anything to do with the EU, you don't need to worry. It's a separate organisation. But yeah, that charter, the Alderman government has signed up to part three, which basically means it's going to continue to support the stuff that it supports at the moment. So that's pretty much what we've signed up to.
But it will mean there'll be more jobs for people that do have a knowledge of the Manx language, definitely, you know, and within different roles. And also, one big thing that we do really need for the future is more teachers, not just teachers, people that are senior education support workers, carers, secretaries, caretakers, everything really. You know, the more there is,
that's one of the great things about the fact that this started back in the early 90s is we are now getting people. Well, we're probably past getting people who've been through the whole system. Some will have GCSEs, some will have A-levels in Manx. Others will just have a basic knowledge of Manx that they've learned from the peripatetic team, but they are now in the workforce and using their Manx, hopefully.
And have opportunities to use it. And also, I mean, it doesn't have to be for a job. It's just for their own, you know, socialising and different. And yeah. And also creativity. There's a lot of, it's wonderful to see. There's a lot more people. There's a lot of artwork that incorporates Manx into it and music and, you know, and all sorts of different genres of music as well, which is really good to see.
Yes, it is. And actually that possibly neatly allows us to move into, well, actually you've got two posters in front of you, so before we move off the Skimmy Gilgak, let's hear about that first.
Right, so because it's been 35 years that the Skimmy was first started, and it's the year of the Manx language as well, what we usually do, the Cooshes usually happens in October, and one of the things we do is we the year sixes, they're the ones in the last year of primary, they write a postcard in Manx and they send it to other year sixes and other schools. And we're supported by the Isle of Man Post Office to do this. But this year, for the year of the Manx language, the Cooshes is going to be in the end of September. And we were thinking about what could we do to make it a bit more special, because it's a special year for us, for the team, and also for the year of the Manx language. So what we're doing is a competition for postcard designs, and whoever wins the design, so we're doing it for different age groups in Key Stage 2, Key Stage 3, Key Stage 4 and 5, so that's like from Year 4, then they can design a postcard, send it in, and they can give it to the Manx teacher, or they can post it in or email it in, however, doesn't really matter. And if you win, say your postcard design won, your postcard design will get printed professionally, and then we'll use those for the Koosh Vua in September. And so we'll have the one used for the Key Stage 2, that'll get used for the primary, and whoever's in, we'll do it with all the Key Stages this year. And I'm hoping to, with the Key Stage 5, is to get them to write postcards to people such as the Taoiseach or people in the Scottish Assembly and maybe some Manx celebrities that are on the island and off the island. And hopefully they'll reply in Manx. So this is another thing we'd like to do. So that's in September. So this is the competition. It's on our website, which is just Manx Language Service, but there are posters around and on social media. And you just scan the QR code and that gives you all the information. Your children don't have to do it through school. They can do it at home. Or if you're not in school, if somebody's educated at home, they can do it that way. It doesn't matter. And the only extra thing I want to say is for Key Stage 4 and 5, there's an extra competition for a stamp design. And whoever that will get used as a prepaid stamp on all the postcards. Now, the big thing is all the designs must have is some Manx words incorporated into their design. And the theme is Manx themes, Manx myths and legends. And we're quite looking for, you can put a bit of a modern twist onto it. It doesn't have to be very traditional. You can see what you can come up with. Okay.
Well, that sounds fascinating. And to do all of this, is there a website or something that, if they don't catch up with this through the schools and your
yeah.
team?
Yeah. If you just probably Google Manx Language Service, you could say competition, or it is on our website. We've got a Facebook page, Manx Language Service, so you probably find it that way if you look at our posts. And like I say, there's a QR code. And it has been sent to all the schools, and I have actually emailed libraries as well to put poster up, you know, so it's just as many places as possible.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's very, yeah, very good. And let's hope that you'll come back at some point and tell us some of the replies that have come back in, because it would be, well, I know that there are people, politicians certainly in Ireland and Scotland and Wales, who know a lot about the Isle of Man and are very supportive about what we're doing with the language. And of course, another part of the work that the Manx Language Officer for the Department of Education does is attending British Irish Council's conferences and talking about the great successes we've been having with promoting and developing the Manx language.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, so that's Rob Tier. He's still the Manx Language Officer, so it's sort of split the role, and then what I do is just lead the Manx Language Service.
Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, through the work of several Manx language officers over the years, that word has been spread. Mm. And depending on how some of the elections go, because of course there's some elections, I know there's some to the Scottish Parliament, maybe to the Welsh Assembly as well. I think there is to the Welsh Assembly. So depending on how they turn out, we may have people re-elected that know the island very well.
Well, could, oh yeah, and on the island we're coming up for an election this year.
Yeah.
Maybe that's a good question to ask your MHK, your prospective MHK, is their attitude towards the Manx language.
Mm.
Might be worth finding that out.
And most politicians now really do seem to get it. I mean, I've been very fortunate. Daphne Kane has asked me to go along and do some Manx lessons for some of the Tynwald members, and at one stage we had almost half of the Tynwald members had turned up, a lot of them now are using a little bit of Manx in the parliamentary setting, which people might say, well, what are they wasting their time doing that, they should be speaking English. Some Manx speakers might well be saying, well, it's just tokenism because they're not really doing very much. But on the whole, I think it's a great thing that they are using Manx in the parliamentary setting, and fantastic to hear.
It is, yeah. I suppose it was Peter Caron was really
He was the pioneer.
Yeah.
No, he did a great service, and I think he's often... possibly because of his outspoken nature in politics, he's often undervalued for the tremendous work that he did in promoting Manx. And who can forget the waterboard vans with Ushtia written in big letters along the side? And as a result, I think most people know what Ushtia means.
A lot of people say Ushti. But then I always say, if you write the word Killia down, I say, you know that's Killia, don't you?
Yeah.
And then I said, well, Ushta, same sort of similar sound at the end, you know.
Well, as outgoing clerk to Russian, I have had the misfortune to hear many people mispronouncing Balakilia.
It's Killia.
And I suppose... It's an understandable thing if you are new to a place, but if I went to England and started talking about the River Thames, I think people would soon starts saying, it's not the Thames, it's the Thames. But how would I know?
Well, that's it. Yeah. People don't know if they don't hear it, and they'd assume. So it's a bit, I don't know, it's a bit like having a class or having a way that people know what how these things are said, you know. I mean, some people, like, say, have things written phonetically, like they have an A on the end, don't they, rather than an EY, to stop that confusion.
Yes, it's of all the general design of the Manx spelling system isn't so bad once you get used to it, but the EY at the end of the word of a word is the one bit that really does throw most English speakers who've never come across Manx before. But it's never an E sound. It's always an E or a Y sound.
Like Kersha, Banya, Kilia.
Yeah, and Worcester. Of course, Banya, the great...
it's on the pot,
Isle of Man creameries have Banya on all their cartons, which is a tremendous thing.
Be nice to see some Kersha as well.
Well, yes. Well, maybe it'll come. Maybe it will.
It would be great. And Eam, bit of Eam as well, be good.
Yeah. So then, I mean, in terms of the progress that you're making, I mean, what are the hopes for the future from the Skimmy Gaeilge, the Manx language service?
Well, if I wanted to do what I'd like to do, but we probably wouldn't be allowed. Well, it's not I wouldn't be allowed. It's just it comes down to bigger things, like you know,
well,
the economy, money, all this stuff, finance. But if that wasn't an issue, I'd have more teachers, teacher training for people on the island that could go become a teacher and do Manx. Have Manx Key Stage 1 and in foundation. And then hopefully from also, I mean, but that's not a part of our remit. It would be good to have obviously more preschool, because that's really important as well for children. But it's because there's gaps, you see. So you might go to Munja Vega and do a lot of Manx, but you couldn't go to the Bun School Gaeilgeac for various reasons. Probably a lot more people would like to go but couldn't.
Yeah.
It's logistics.
It's the geographical.
It's life
thing,
isn't it?
Yeah.
So then there's a gap, isn't there? And then you don't get anything else till you get to, depending on your family circumstances and what you do, maybe you do Manx dancing, and so maybe you've got exposure to Manx that way or other ways. But often there isn't much, and there's like a bit of a desert, really. So ideally, it would be good if there was, you know, not a desert.
Yeah.
Where people have the choice to dip in, dip out, but it's there for all the way through your life from zero to whenever, forever.
Yeah.
You know, it's lifelong learning. So, but at the moment, it is still a bit disjointed. There's still a few gaps. And I mean, even in further education on the island, there isn't a lot of opportunities there either, which it would be good. I mean, I wonder, you know, as there's more bilingual young people, you know, there's not a lot for them, really, for their futures and to use the skills that, you know, their skill set they've got. So that some have gone off to other places and are quite famous musicians now and all sorts. But for the others, you know, I feel there should be more something available for them. That's my personal opinion, you know.
Yeah.
I feel that's the way we should be going, where there's a pathway for people, different pathways, but where you've got the chance to, all the way through your education, be able to, if you can speak Manx or are brought up in a household with Manx, where you can use it as much as English, but you could be able to use it.
Yes, and of course, one of the areas which Irish, Welsh, Scottish Gaelic are used quite significantly is in relation to the tourist trade.
Oh, yes. Well, interestingly, there's the Isle of Man Business Forum on Thursday, Inter-Celtic Business Forum, isn't there? And the speakers that are talking just about that, about the Gaeltacht and how the language is a very important attraction for tourists. And I think that's something that's underutilised yet on the island that could be further developed in the future as well.
That was the head of the Department of Education's Manx Language Service, Cathy Clucas. So what do you think? Is it a good thing to teach our children a language that, alongside English, is an official language in the Isle of Man? Of course, our children need to know about and understand the rest of the world, but surely it can't do any harm to learn a bit about the culture and heritage of our island home. Perhaps you have a less supportive view about the Manx language. Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast. I'm Phil Gorn. Go to Myers and Geistachrom. Thanks for listening.